very simple. So I could say, I don't get what I want. I stomp, 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 stomp. And then they would stomp with me.
Audrey Hausig joined the Music School of Delaware in March. She has helped the music school offer more music therapy services at the Wilmington branch, as well as facilities outside of the school, including behavioral schools and schools for people on the autism spectrum. The music school also offers music therapy services for older adults at some local facilities. Here, Hausig gives an example of an exercise she does with small children struggling with anger management.
The space is hopefully helping them feel grounded, but we're talking about not getting what you want, right? And how that can make you angry, and giving them a coping skill, which is to stomp their feet. And then we talk about, it kind of goes on to talk about some different things that might make you mad. And then we get to the kind of fun part where they're in charge. They feel in control. Because when you don't get what you want, you're not in control. Even for us grown-ups, we don't like it. So in this part, they get to choose if we're gonna stomp like fast. Stomp fast. Or, loud or quiet or soft, but they tell me what to play. And I, no one ever chooses soft. I can stomp soft. So in music therapy, we use evidence-based interventions to help people work towards their goals and work towards greater health. What we would do is use singing, instrument playing, various kinds of music making, whether it's songs that are familiar or songs that we improvise or write. We do listening and discussing the music, all in the hopes to help people connect, to feel a certain level of safety and trust of the therapist, and be able to work towards their goals.
She says there are several reasons why music is therapeutic.
I mean, I think we're very musical people. The way we speak, the way we interact is musical. Something that's really special about music is that we can all be in the same space at the same time. In a verbal group, when everybody starts talking, people get angry and uncomfortable, and we can't hear what we're all saying. But we can all make music at the same time, or even just two of us, and be in that space together. Again, people use music really personally in their own lives, so they bring that with them to therapy. So if someone is going through something and I choose a song that they really relate to, that's music from their genre, from, say, it's like something from 1980 that only someone from New York who maybe is Puerto Rican would know, and I bring that song, they're going to connect. Right, even though I'm from a different era and a different background. I think that's another thing that's really special. And then there's lots of ways we can manipulate physiological responses with our music. So we're not just talking, but there are things we do. So if someone has an unsteady breath, maybe it's because they're at the end of their lives, we can play along to their breathing, and it will be unsteady, which is uncomfortable for them. And then we gradually make our playing steady, and their breathing goes with us. Just like you can't help but tap your foot to the music, the breath does the same thing. The heart rate can do the same thing. So we can do things with our music physiologically that make people more comfortable and help them feel connected. So if you're working with someone who has no words at all, you can still connect and get responses from each other.
Hausig gives an example of an exercise she's used with people who have limited mobility due to multiple sclerosis or spinal cord injuries.
We would do a progressive muscle relaxation, which was developed in the 1920s by a doctor named Edmund Jacobson, I believe. And you tense and release your muscles, and it draws attention to where you might be holding tension. And so you say, you do some deep breaths, and you say, notice your hand, hold your hand tight, feel the tension, and now release. A little slower than that. What I do is we've done our deep breath. I'm using this like kind of open chord, and I have this repeated bass line, which can be grounding. And when we want to shift our attention, I shift my chord. So now shift your attention, let's say the shoulders. I'm doing the suspension, which is a tension and release right there. So you've focused on your shoulder. I'll say, now tense your shoulders, squeeze them tight, notice how that tension feels, and now relax, noticing the difference from when your shoulders were tense to when you allow them to relax. And I'm back in my kind of relaxing holding pattern now. So even someone who's not able to tense their shoulders, can have that sensation of tense and release, and find some relaxation by doing that. And if you are able to physically tense your various muscles, it kind of enhances it.
Hausig has also worked with people struggling with addiction and substance use. She says a group will often discuss songs patients are familiar with, which can help them experience emotions or get them talking. Groups will also write new songs and play music.
I've mentioned strengths-based, but strengths are so important for people who are struggling with substance use. They tend to have just overwhelming amounts of guilt and shame, and that can lead them to relapse. And so... or to continue using while they're still out using. So just working on strength, working on just having them feel connected and feel a sense of compassion. A way we can do that in music therapy is we might just write a song about strengths, and in group work, that's really important, because if someone can't find a strength within themselves, maybe someone in the group can say, oh, well, I noticed that you're really helpful, or that you're caring, or that you've been through all this stuff and you're still upbeat, or whatever it is. So maybe making a list of strengths and then finding a song that reflects those strengths, or even writing a song about those strengths, which can be really powerful, because here you're hearing the group, or maybe me as a therapist, sing back to you all these good things about you, and just validating who they are as people and working on their strengths. Another thing we might do in a group for people with substance use is work on their triggers. So triggers are things that often lead people to relapse. So the goal is to stay in recovery, to keep doing the things that help them, and the triggers might be a family member who's really hard on them. They could, of course, be the people they used to use with, some sort of stressful environment, the places they used to go to. So what we'll do is have one person take an instrument and play a steady rhythm, and that rhythm reflects them staying on their path to recovery. I encourage them to have somebody help them keep that steady rhythm, because asking for help is really hard, especially when you're overcome with, you know, guilt and shame and not feeling good about yourself. So they have, hopefully, choose someone to help them. The rest of the group plays the trigger. So while someone is playing steadily, the rest of the group is just playing really erratically, seeing if they can throw them off. And so then either they're able to keep their steady beat or they're not, and then we process it. So what we might find is maybe if they weren't able to keep the steady beat, they hadn't asked for help, or they were playing something really complicated and it became too difficult and they kind of succumbed to those triggers that were like the other instruments in the room. So we might do it again, and maybe this time they will allow someone to help them. And having two people play the beat together is easier than just trying to do it yourself, or playing something more simple and focused. Is easier. So, you know, we explore, you know, what did it feel like to receive the help? We explore even for the other people, what did it feel like to be the triggers? You know, what was going on? And so we draw parallels between what happened in the music and what happens in their lives.
Hausig says some participants can be resistant, especially if they're going through detox or experiencing emotions they haven't felt in a while. She says she tries to break songwriting down into simple tasks, like choosing between several riffs or tempos.
We can also do it. I like to use GarageBand, and so we're making beats and using loops, and it's all just a series of decisions. You don't have to actually be playing the instruments. And a lot of time, there are really talented singers, rappers, musicians, instrument players, too.
Hausig says social justice and inequality are important for music therapists to keep in mind.
Most music therapists are white women. Not all, but overwhelming majority. So if you go to a music therapy conference, they all look like me, except for like three people. So that's something that's really important for us to be aware of, to be aware of our privilege and how that affects our relationship. And I think within that, to understand how social injustice and trauma affects the people we work with, and just be open to their experience and not be fragile when they describe what they've been through, and let it be a place where they can share what they need to share, whoever it is that we're working with. And then also to just value all different types of music, which hopefully goes without saying, but finding value in all music, whether you like it or not. I personally cannot stand Journey, but I have played Don't Stop Believing 5 gazillion times because it helps people. Mm-hmm. Now it's in my head. Sorry, everybody. You know, but just valuing people as individuals.
That's Audrey Hausig, a music therapist who works in Philadelphia and for the Music School of Delaware. And I'm Sophia Schmidt for Delaware Public Media.